Local. Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, a wildfires update, a red flag warning in effect for the Catskills in the Hudson Valley as the Ulster County fire is 95% contained, and that fire in Orange County continues to burn. We'll have an update and speak to Hudson Valley Weather about what's causing these drought conditions. The Skinners Falls Bridge is to be dismantled before the end of the year, according to PennDOT. The announcement caught some residents off guard. We'll speak to one of them later. The Trans Support Initiative, composed of people from all walks of life, committed to addressing the need in Sullivan and Wayne counties for gender-affirming safe spaces and support services for the trans plus community. We'll learn more. And a new short film produced in Jeffersonville, plus Moving Toward Health with Maggie Fitzpatrick. That's all coming up. But first, the news from NPR.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Congress is back to work this week. Senators are expected to pick their leaders. The Associated Press has called the Arizona Senate race for Democrat Ruben Gallego. This means the Republicans will have 53 seats and the majority in the next Senate. GOP senators are picking their leader this week, who will also serve as the Senate Majority Leader. Senators John Cornyn of Texas and John Thune of South Dakota are considered front-runners. Florida Senator Rick Scott has been mentioned. NPR's Barbara Sprunt says President-elect Trump has not publicly weighed in.
This is a secret vote, but it is an open question as to whether Trump himself decides to publicly put his finger on the scale and what kind of consequences that might have.
NPR's Barbara Sprunt reporting. Humanitarian groups working in Gaza say Israel has largely failed to live up to Biden administration demands that more aid be allowed into the Palestinian territory. The White House had threatened to cut off some military aid to Israel if it didn't do more before today's 30-day deadline to address concerns Gaza is on the verge of famine. NPR Scott Newman has more from Tel Aviv.
For the first time in more than a month, two trucks carrying food and water have managed to reach northern Gaza, an area that has been under intense bombardment by Israel for weeks. But that falls far short of a U.S. demand outlined in an October letter. In a scorecard published by aid groups such as Oxfam and Mercy Corps, Israel gets a failing grade. These groups say there should be significant consequences for Israel, including a suspension of arms shipments from the U.S. Israeli officials say they are working to expand humanitarian aid to Gaza. Last week, the United Nations warned that Gaza verges on famine. However, Israel says that's an exaggerated assessment. Scott Newman, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Thousands of last-minute challenges to mail-in ballots in Pennsylvania have either been withdrawn or rejected in the days following the November election. NPR's Hansi Lo Wong says Republican state lawmakers and far-right activists are being criticized by some.
Election officials in 15 Pennsylvania counties received more than 4,400 challenges against voters' mail-in ballot applications, most of them days before Election Day. NPR has confirmed around 77% of those challenges were withdrawn by right-wing activists and two Republican state lawmakers by last Thursday. To voter Christine Dax, whose ballot application was challenged, the timing underscores these objections were baseless.
It's especially enraging because now that their preferred candidate has won, now it's all gone away. It's all no big deal, business as usual, hope everyone forgets. But I haven't forgotten. Definitely won't be forgetting that.
In public hearings, some challengers said they were concerned about how overseas voters are entered into Pennsylvania's voter registration system. County officials say they've been following state and federal laws. Hansi Lo Wong, NPR News.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down nearly 50 points. This is NPR. The top leader of the Church of England, or the Anglican Church, has resigned. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, is stepping down. This follows a church report last week into a church volunteer who was a serial sexual and physical abuser of children for years. The report faulted Welby for failing to inform police as soon as he became aware of the volunteer's abuse. Welby says he is stepping aside for the good of the church. He says he continues to feel shame for the failures of the church. This year's UN Climate Summit is continuing today in Azerbaijan. NPR's Nate Perez says indigenous people from around the world are among those taking part in the 2 weeks of talks.
Indigenous people from the U.S. say President-elect Donald Trump will likely withdraw the country from the Paris Agreement again. That treaty set a goal of limiting global warming. Jacob Johns is Hopi Nakhmeatam. He says tribal sovereignty demands that indigenous people engage on the international level, including at this UN Convention on Climate Change.
And distill our ancient indigenous wisdom into contemporary climate policy.
Indigenous communities are often significantly impacted by climate change. That's why indigenous leaders are pushing for the financial resources needed for climate solutions and a just transition to renewable energy. Nate Perez, NPR News.
A Massachusetts Air National Guard member will be sentenced today for leaking highly classified military documents. Jack Teixeira put the very sensitive documents on the social media platform Discord. These revealed U.S. information about the war in Ukraine. Federal prosecutors are seeking a 17-year prison term for him. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include EBSCO, supporting open source technology and making open platforms possible for libraries of all sizes. Learn more at EBSCO.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. I want to give you an update on those wildfires in Ulster and Orange counties that we've been telling you about. The Jennings Creek fire in Orange County that claimed the life of a teenage state parks employee continues to burn on its Instagram account this morning. Orange County government gave this update. Quote, fire lines held last night with the fire making negligible incremental gains. Crews worked throughout the night with volunteer crews and DEC rangers, widening and reinforcing existing fire lines between the fire and areas of Watawa Park and Sylvan Park in Rumsey. There are currently no evacuations in place and no structures in immediate risk. The Jennings Creek fire is continuing to exist primarily in the Sterling Forest State Park and is boxed in by fire lines. Yesterday, New York State Police and New York National Guard helicopters dropped over 100 buckets of water on the fire. Additional support continues to arrive throughout New York State, including volunteer fire companies and New York State resources. Residents in Orange County are encouraged to continue to abide by the current burn ban in effect to prevent additional wildfires from occurring. In Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger gave an update this morning on the White House fire in the town of Denning. Quote, as of nightfall Monday, firefighters have achieved 95% containment of the White House fire with a calculated burn area of 630 acres. New York State DEC forest rangers and volunteer fire departments from Ulster, Sullivan, and Greene counties are continuing to work on full containment. Now, we should note the National Weather Service has issued a red flag warning for today from now through 6 p.m. for the Mid-Hudson Valley and the Catskills, including Ulster County, Greene County, Sullivan, and Delaware counties. That means a higher risk of wildfire due to a combination of warmer temperatures, very low humidity, and stronger winds. Burn bans are in effect in every municipality in Ulster County and Orange County, and outdoor burning is prohibited there. Outdoor burning not recommended in other areas. So what's causing all of these drought conditions? Jason Dole spoke with Alex Mara, CEO and founder of Hudson Valley Weather.
People need to understand there's two different factors at play here. The region's running anywhere from a 10 to, in some cases, a 13-inch rain deficit over the last 90 days. So less than a half an inch of rain is not what we would call drought busting. But in terms of, you know, moistening up the underbrush and the dead leaves and the dead vegetation across the forest floors, that is a monumental assist for a fire department that's working on the spread of wildfire. So I do know that the rainfall helped. Hopefully they make a bunch of progress to get ahead of the changing and increasing winds that we're expecting over the next 24 hours.
Yeah, especially because conditions are about as good as they're going to get in the near future for this particular blaze. I was heartened to see that the rain that was forecast did come and that it was, I know it tapered off and wasn't as plentiful further down in the lower Hudson Valley, but more up in the Catskills. I know we got it was a good dampening. As you say, it can help slow those fires. But that's the other reason why I wanted to talk to you is, boy, it's been dry. It seems like there's been a number of times in the past month that I've heard rain in the forecast, and then it just never gets here. I'm just wondering what's going on and when can we expect some rain?
Yeah, so, basically what we've been dealing with is it all goes back to whatever upper level pattern we're locked in. And people will recognize that while we're in these type of patterns, it seems like forever. But remember that patterns tend to have muscle memory to them. So if you think back to, let's just take it back as early as the first half of this year, where we barely had a spring because it wouldn't stop raining. Or when you think about the summer before that, when we consistently had severe weather every single day, or the winter before that, where every storm was an ice storm, it all goes back to the bigger picture, is that at a macro scale, weather patterns tend to get stuck. And while they are cyclical, they can get some muscle memory and get stuck in specific patterns. And after our wet spring, we fell into a pattern that featured a high pressure locked over the western Atlantic, what's known as a Bermuda High. And that high pressure has basically been in control for the entire second half of summer, all of fall. It's still in control. And that high pressure being parked is keep major storm track to our south and to our north, which has basically perpetually locked us into a very dry patch. Now, when you're talking about weather and climate on a larger scale, the hypocrisy in all of this that no one will ever really piece together unless they like to nerd out over the weather is the fact that that same Bermuda High that has us in the worst drought in over 20 years, and for some reporting locations, some, specifically the lower valley, over 100 years, the drought fall, is the same Bermuda High that stopped the forecasted most active hurricane season to not materialize in the entire Atlantic basin outside of the Gulf, right? So when you think of what was supposed to be from a hurricane standpoint that never materialized, barely zero East Coast hurricane tropical storm threats almost the entire season, is because that high pressure hasn't moved. And that's why every hurricane this year continues to form in the Caribbean and get sucked into the Gulf of Mexico, because that's its only out, because it can't get around the high pressure, right? So while we're all cursing the high pressure for causing us these droughts and ultimately these wildfires, somewhere in a parallel universe, there is no high pressure. Maybe the most active forecasted hurricane season does materialize, and we have an Irene or Sandy along the East Coast that never happened, right? So there's always plus and minuses to these weather patterns that set up. Unfortunately, looking ahead, really no measurable significant rain in the forecast this week. Some of the models are hinting towards another light rain event, maybe Thursday into Friday, but overall, we're leaning towards a dry remainder of this week. Now, looking beyond that, we are starting to see some signs of an overall pattern shift that looks to occur as we get into mid, let's call it late November. So beyond this week into the end of next week. But again, remember, it all goes back to the caveat, right? This overall weather pattern change may weather. And talking about nor'easters, right? So in typical Northeast fashion, feast or famine, when this pattern does break down, given the time of year that we're in, all it will ultimately do is open up the door for a more active and impactful winter that we could also then ultimately get stuck in for numerous weeks, right? So I do think there's some hope on the horizon from a moisture content standpoint, but it may come in of this travel and winter storms.
Okay. All right. Well, and if that is the case, if it does open us up to a particularly busy winter weather-wise, you know what people got to do then? They got to check in with the Hudson Valley weather. That's what I was going to say.
Exactly. That's what we're here for. You know, we appreciate all of our followers. We know that winter weather holds a particularly interesting level of commitment to folks. People love tracking winter weather, it seems, more than any other weather that exists. So, yeah. You know, people know where to check in. But that's what I would say if you asked me to shake my magical eight ball. let's call it third and fourth week of November, I see some hope in the pattern changing.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for giving a little bit of hope and a lot of bit of perspective and some detail on what's going on in the weather. Alex, best of luck to you, and we'll be checking in with you again some other time. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Jason Dole speaking to Alex Mara of Hudson Valley Weather. We should note there was an impairment on his cell phone line, so it wasn't your radio. You can find out more on hudsonvalleyweather.com and on their social media. And a reminder that the National Weather Service has issued a red flag warning for today until 6 p.m. for the Mid-Hudson Valley and the Catskills, including Ulster, Greene, Sullivan, and Delaware counties. That means a higher risk of wildfire due to a combination of warmer temperatures, very low humidities, and stronger winds. Outdoor burning is not recommended. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Skinners Falls Bridge is to be dismantled before the end of the year. Some local citizens are alarmed by that. We'll speak to one of them next. This is Radio Catskill. Chatskill on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. Every Friday night, it's my goal to bring WJFF listeners great music. Music from all over the world. Stuff that's been lost in the archives and needs to be heard. Classics you already knew you loved. And new stuff from established and emerging artists. All right here on The Mixtape, WJFF Radio Catskill.
Friday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Last week, the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, or PennDOT, announced that the Skinners Falls Bridge, carrying Route 1002 over the Delaware River in Wayne County, Pennsylvania, will be dismantled before the end of the year. The decision comes after a recent inspection revealed the bridge's condition necessitates its removal for public safety, particularly for river traffic, according to PennDOT. Closed to vehicular traffic since 2019, PennDOT says the bridge poses a risk to Delaware River boating and recreational activities. They are holding a virtual meeting Thursday, the 14th, this week at 2, to provide further information. That announcement from PennDOT caught some local residents off guard, including Karen Menigan from the Zane Gray Gallery in Narrowsburg, New York. She joins us this morning. Karen, good morning.
Hi there, Tim.
Yeah, so
thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So PennDOT announced that they're going to dismantle the bridge before winter sets in. What was your reaction?
Well, I wanted to express my shock and dismay over their recent announcement. We've been following the situation at Skinners Falls ever since it was closed in 2019, attending the various commentary period public hearing, and never...
Karen, do we have you? Karen, I think we lost Karen there. We'll take a quick break and we'll try to get Karen back. You're listening to Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill's big annual music sale is just a couple of weeks away. Saturday, November 30th, 10 to 3 at the Liberty Mall in Liberty. We've got tons of records, tons of LPs and CDs, cassettes, 8-tracks, cheap discs priced to move, pricey platters for discerning collectors, plus vintage audio equipment, instruments, oddities, and more. And yes, we're still accepting donations of records in good condition for Radio Catskill's big annual music sale. November 30th, the Saturday after Thanksgiving at the Liberty Mall.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition. Weeknights at 6, right after All Things Considered. The local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. I think we've got Karen Menigan of the Zane Gray Gallery in Narrowsburg back on the line. Karen, hello.
Yes. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, we were talking about your reaction to PennDOT announcing that the Skinners Falls Bridge connecting Wayne County to Sullivan County across the Delaware River is going to be dismantled before the end of the year. Tell us, if you can, again, your reaction and why.
Yes, thank you. Well, I have to say, getting the email last Thursday, I'm still in a state of shock and dismay over their indecision that has gone on for over 5 years on exactly how to address the situation at Skinners Falls, which we all know is an historic designated span on the Upper Delaware River. And I really feel that this recent decision to dismantle it with a more than unreasonable time frame, end of the year, after having done nothing for the past 6 years, is really wasteful. This is a waste of our resources. It is irresponsible to the citizens in the communities, and to not have reached a conclusion after 5 years of engineering studies and community outreach to come up with nothing but dismantling is really unfortunate. I don't believe that this should happen. I believe that they should come back now with public inputs. I know they're expressing the time is pressing, but I'd like to say let this pressing issue force them to finally perform their duties and come up with a reasonable solution there, which is not to demolish it. I mean, obviously, we are on the side of preservation and rehabilitation and not upsizing the scale of the bridge, which is really at the heart of the controversy that is out scale and actually unnecessary for the community that it serves. We have two neighboring bridges, 3 miles to the north and to the south. And in all this time of its closure, there has never been one incident that has proven to be, I'm not saying of catastrophic proportions, but it has not been an issue that it has been closed. Mm. So we see a reasonable solution here before dismantling. I think there should be a stay of execution, so to speak, and they need to come up with a plan, and we need to work on it again as a community.
Now, PennDOT says after a recent in-depth bridge inspection, it was determined that out of an abundance of caution that they should dismantle this bridge before winter sets in the interest of public safety. They've also mentioned in a call to the Upper Delaware Council that and clarified that dismantling does not equal demolition. That they're saying that they're taking it down. The motivation to take it down is before it could collapse, catalog its components, and store them with future rehabilitation still being studied. Future rehabilitation is one of the options in addition to the upscaling that you mentioned. And then I guess the other option on the table is just taking it out altogether. But you're still not satisfied with that clarification?
No, I'm not. For the most part, because the future determination is what concerns me. I am not an engineer. We have not been presented the engineering studies, and these safety concerns were not brought forward prior to now, and the haste with which they would like to accomplish this. I mean, this is an ancient structure. You can imagine, I mean, it's like an archaeological dig here where care and concern for the bridge could render it unbuildable. I mean, we don't know. There are a lot of ifs there. And I mean, I think the key to the controversy is the juncture that we are at is that it's still to be determined. You know, we need to know now. We need to come together. I mean, I think ahead of any action, a decision needs to be made.
There is a virtual public meeting scheduled for this Thursday, November 14th at 2. PennDOT says to provide further information. Are you planning to attend that meeting?
I absolutely am. I would like to I would hope that maybe you guys could also post the link to attend. It's a Microsoft meeting, which I don't know that everybody has the app for that, but I believe it will be held in webinar style. We are not allowed to comment. We will be able to listen in, but I think it's very important. And we can still email comments. I mean, we're not silent. We need to attend.
Yeah, there is a link on our website at wjffradio.org. There's also a link and a hotline at the PennDOT website. PennDOT has a whole page and section devoted to the Skinners Falls Bridge Project at penndot.pa.gov. Are you going to continue to rally the community to continue to provide input and hopefully move to resolution here?
Yes, I'll tell you, I just want to reiterate, we've had two events at the Skinners Falls Bridge. We had another one in June there with 54 people attending. It was a community arts day to celebrate the history at Milton Skinner House at the foot of Skinners Falls Bridge. We followed with a lovely exhibition of work. It is still on our website of all the participants. And we were at Narrowsburg Union all summer with lovely work created at the site. So we're proponents of preserving our history.
And if folks are listening, they want to get in touch with you or get more information, where can they go?
You can come to our website. It's Zane Gray Plein Air. That's P-L-E-I-N, Air. Or contact me. info@zanegrayplenair.com.
All right, Karen Menigan of the Zane Gray Gallery in Narrowsburg, New York. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Tim.
All right, and again, PennDOT has information at their website, penndot.pa.gov, and there's more information on our website under local news at wjffradio.org. We'll take a break and back with more Radio Chatskill after this.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hey there, I'm Cassie of Rare Pair Radio. It's a weekly showcase of primarily female artists, but also a wide range of avant-garde musicians. I will be playing the fruit of post-punk, experimental, and fringe music, only on WJFF Radio Catskill. Rare Pair Radio, Friday at 8 p.m.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Trans Support Initiative is composed of people from all walks of life who are committed to address the need in Sullivan and Wayne counties for gender-affirming safe spaces and support services for the Trans Plus community members, family, and friends. Joining us from the Trans Support Initiative this morning are Paul and Miro. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Tim.
What caused you to start this initiative?
One way to put it is we saw we needed to fill in the gap. And what I mean by that is I work as a therapist. In my work with trans people and their families, there is a noticeable lack of services in the immediate area. We have plenty of services in the Westchester area, Lehigh Valley, but for transgender people and their families, it's impractical for to access those services. And we saw a need in Sullivan and Wayne counties for services, education, advocacy efforts. So the light bulb went off and we said, what can we do about this? And a bunch of us got together and decided to do something about it.
And your mission is to fulfill your commitment to provide services, education, and advocacy. I suppose also part of that is awareness, making sure people know that these services are available. But on the other side of it, making sure that people in the community know that trans people exist here.
Yes, yes. I think the number one goal here is visibility. Visibility. Every time we talk, every time we show our face, every time there's a radio interview or a piece in the paper, we're saying transgender people exist. Their supporters exist. Their friends exist. We are committed to, we're calling it SEAC, to provide services, education, and advocacy. Now, in Westchester County, you have the Loft, which is a LGBT plus center, and they do a lot of stuff, a lot of great stuff. In Lehigh Valley, you have the Eastern PA Trans Initiative Project. I think it's, I'm not getting that quite right.
Triversity in Milford. So like a few around the area, but like here in Sullivan and Wayne is what you're focused on.
Yeah. There's now we can't do what they're doing, but we're trying to do in little steps what we can do. For instance, us being here today. Mm-hmm. The River Reporter is this past week run an article about Trans Awareness Day. In terms of education, we recently had our first community outreach educational workshop. It was called Cultural Competency Trans 101. And Corinne Goodwin from the Eastern PA Trans Equity Project did that. So in our own little ways, we're trying to fill in the gap. Yes, do we have grand plans down the road? Yes. But right now, we're doing what we can in the areas of service, education, and advocacy.
We've heard the demonization of trans people during this last election, and I don't think that that's going to end anytime soon, given the outcome. What are your concerns, Miro, about the community moving forward as the community has been really a punching bag and worse in terms of rhetoric?
Yeah, that has been a concern in particular in coming on the radio and identifying ourselves by name. And we thought about, you know, like I said to my partner last night, well, what if someone throws a rock through our window because they found out we're trans? But she basically said it would be worth it just to make people aware of who we are, because even though I have contact with the, you know, community and the services that I get from the, you know, the inhabitants of the area, people don't really put the label on. And I don't like labels either, but they know me, they see me as a person, but they don't think, even though, you know, I have, I have a boy's haircut and I dress like a boy, they don't really think of me as being trans or non-binary. So just for people to know that this is what it feels like, and this is what I like to be seen as.
And we should note that you asked us to use your first names here during your appearance out of an abundance of caution, and we're honoring that. In terms of just what you're hearing from other people in the community about this attack, a frequent target from President-elect Trump and members of his party, how are they feeling?
Well, I'll answer that. Last Saturday, we had our monthly meeting, TSI meeting, and it's always great to get together, but there was the air was electric, because it energizes us, right? It's not going to defeat us. It's going to energize us. And the energy and the enthusiasm at that meeting was higher than it's ever been. So though originally our purpose, and still is, to provide services, connect people with services outside the area, in an odd way, I think it actually is helping us, because we ain't going nowhere.
In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul came out and, you know, reaffirmed the state's commitment to a variety of different folks, and also the state passed Prop 1, the Equal Rights Amendment, to guarantee a feeling, or at least some modicum of safety in this state. Is Pennsylvania, do they still have similar things in place? I know there's not a Prop 1 in the Constitution, but what's the situation in Pennsylvania since you cover Sullivan and Wayne?
Yes, there's many. It's somewhat night and day.
Hmm.
There are many anti-transgender propositions on the boards right now. We're taking a wait-and-see attitude, and of course there's pushback to all of those, fortunately. We'll see what happens.
You mentioned Transgender Awareness Day, Remembrance Day, coming up this Thursday, actually. In Sullivan County, there's going to be a legislative proclamation?
Yes, there'll be a proclamation in honor of Trans Remembrance Day. That's a day that marks, in this last year alone, over 300 people, transgender, non-binary people, murdered. That's not violence, that's not maiming, that's murdered. Internationally, 32 of those people, those incidents, those murders happened in the United States. And the 2004 numbers, that was 2003. 2004 numbers, of course, are not finally in, but we've close to met those same numbers this year.
And are those numbers increasing?
Yes. Yes, if you look over the last 10 years, definitely yes. Mm-hmm.
Mira, what is it you want folks to know about the trans community, the Trans Support Group Initiative? What's the message you really want to get out there by appearing here today?
That we're here and that people are not alone and that they could come and talk about things that are on their mind or what it's like or the challenges that they face, and they're not alone with this, and they don't have to hide.
And if folks want to get more information, where can they go?
Yes, right now, email us at TSI, Trans Support Initiative, group 24 at gmail.com. And we can give you information about, we have a family support group up and running. We have a trans plus group support group. They're both peer groups running. We have a monthly monthly general meeting, the second Saturday of every month. So contact us and we'll give you more information. We'd love to have you join us in this venture.
Of course, I asked you about the reaction to the community on the attacks. What's the reaction of the community been on just having this group available to them?
I think it's been very positive. And we have people coming to our support group, and we get to sit around and shoot the shit about what we think and what's going on, and it's very helpful.
We'll bleep that at some point. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, we talk about all of the anti-trans stuff, but I think it's also more than worthwhile to say, as we began this, and I'll speak for myself, as I approached people, transgender people, families, professionals, cisgender people, say, hey, we're thinking about getting together and doing something. I was met uniformly with great enthusiasm. Not once did I, of course, listen, I picked and chose the people I approached, but great enthusiasm. So we have to remember that I know there's a lot of focus on the fear that's going around right now, but there are many people who are open-minded, kind, and want to make the best possible world we can make.
That's a great message. Thank you very much, Paul Miro from the Trans Support Initiative, helping the need for Sullivan and Wayne counties to help support folks in the trans plus community, their family and their friends. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you,
Tim.
We'll take a break and back with more Radio Chatskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll pay a visit to Kookie's Mad Pad, and we'll hear the exotic sounds of Les Baxter. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, a special episode in collaboration with Futuro's own In the Thick podcast. We take listeners through the historic election day and hear from folks across the country. Then a roundtable discussion to look at the results and reflect on what our future looks like. That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Tuesday. We get to check in with Maggie Fitzpatrick. She is the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat, and she's here with more from her column today, Moving Toward Health. Maggie, hello.
Hi.
How are we moving toward health today?
Oh, in all the ways.
In all the ways.
All the ways. Today, we are moving toward health in things a little bit deeper than just fitness.
Okay.
So this week I was writing about how we can move past our health needs and really get them under control so that way we can then explore more parts of life, right?
Yeah.
And health is one of the things that feels the most challenging. But if we can get it under control, then we can move up in our hierarchy of needs, right, and start to experience some more things.
And you know, you're saying the headline here is it's more than just fitness. And you start out by saying you've always been fascinated with self-actualization. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't really know why, to be honest with you. And I don't really know where it came from, but I am fascinated with just being the best version of myself and how we can do that as humans. It is something that always has fascinated me. And fitness is really one way that I found essentially like an entrance into that world, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. right? Because our health and our fitness is one of the foundational pieces of being the most optimized, best version of ourself. And without that piece, it's really hard to move past that into any, you know, higher states of being.
There is something called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. What is that? What are these? What is this hierarchy? Can you explain us? Walk us through the hierarchy.
Yeah. So if you know search it on Google, you're going to find a triangle, right? And it looks like a pyramid. And
it's not the food pyramid.
Looks similar, but slightly different. And you're going to see different things in different levels of the hierarchy of needs. Okay. So when we're down at the bottom, we're thinking like safety, right? So do I have food? Do I have shelter? Am I safe? That type of thing. Then we move up a level. This is where we have, you know, health and fitness and vitality, things like that. Then as we move up, we have more of our esteem needs, right? So this can be self-esteem. It can be our relationship to ourselves. It can be our relationship to others, love, all of that. And then above that, we have more of our ability to reach self-actualization. And this isn't something that we reach it and we're there forever. It's more of we can have experiences of peaking into this state of being. It's not something that occurs forever, but it's really hard to have these moments. Another word I like to use for it is like a flow state. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but it's like everything just feels really easy, right? Maybe time slows down, like that type of experience. It's really hard to experience that if we're struggling with everything below, right? If we're struggling with safety, if we're struggling with health, if we're struggling with relationships. And so health to me is a really big part of this puzzle. And if we can take the time to figure out what works best for us, then we can move on to all the other things.
So this road to self-actualization is long and can be challenging. You write in your column that only about 2% of people actually ever make it. That sounds daunting.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. I don't think that it's something that we have to, I don't know why I'm fascinated with it. I don't know why, but I don't think it's something we have to obsess over, right? But I kind of like to think of it as like, what things can I do to make myself a little bit easier so I can enjoy it more?
Well, you kind of answer, I mean, you allude toward an answer as to why in your column here. You're a clinical exercise science major. You have a degree in clinical exercise science.
Yeah.
And your college advisor asked you what you wanted to do with it. And he encouraged you to go into a specialty, but you said you wanted to like sort of look at everything.
Yeah, I really struggle with the whole specializing thing.
But that's sort of what layers into this hierarchy, layers into the self-actualization for you.
Yeah, exactly. Because to me, the way I look at it is, like I said, fitness is kind of like the entry, right, into something bigger for me. And yeah, so I love fitness. I love health. I think it's extremely important. And I also just love to look past it as well.
And you talk about, you know, we're going deep here today.
You never know how it's going to go.
I know. I'm like, whoa. But this is good because we're, you know, folks are looking at like how they can prioritize their health, but there's a lot of different reasons why. And, you know, just understanding these different levels and where this is leading helps you kind of go a little deeper yourself, right?
Yeah. And I think that it's really important to have different levels or layers of motivation, right? And our health goals themselves are one really usually motivating layer of reason as to why we're doing it, right? But sometimes we need to look a little bit past that in order to see that maybe it's not as big of a deal as it feels, if that makes sense. Like it's a small piece of this really big puzzle. It doesn't have to feel like it has to take over our whole life. It actually can be manageable. We can find, you know, routines that work for us and have something else to look forward to too, instead of getting wrapped up in it's only about health all the time.
Well, and also there's a tendency for folks to feel as if they're always in a survival mode. But when you break it down like this and see like, oh, I've met this level of need. Okay, well, now I'm at this level where it might be easier for some folks to understand and slow it down a bit and then achieve more.
You know, that's a really good point, because I think that, at least this is my personal experience, it's really easy to constantly feel like I'm in survival mode and to feel like stressors are as big as that base layer of my survival, right? Where really it's more of like a relationship struggle that I'm having, right? And my survival, my safety is actually not at risk at this moment, right? And maybe sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not, right? And I think it's important to be able to recognize that, because then we do have that ability to look back and say, wow, look how far I've come. Look what I have provided for myself. Look where I am right now. I have the ability to, you know, really use this foundation that I have created, or I'm working on creating, to then be able to improve other areas of my life too.
Well, and someone who has a degree in clinical exercise science, you sum up by saying there's more to life than just exercise and nutrition.
Yep.
So yeah. That's, well, I mean, you're kind of coming around to this whole idea. You're not kind of coming around. You are. You understand this, that it is about all of these different factors.
Yeah, it's just about more. It's just one piece. And I think that, you know, when we can look at it for what it is, as one piece of the big puzzle, it makes it feel a little bit more manageable, because it doesn't have to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to, you know, take over all of our goals and all of our ambitions. It's just a foundational piece that sets us up for something more.
And so keeping it simple can help you move out of that survival mode.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. That's Maggie Fitzpatrick. She's moving toward health, and she's moving us toward health every Tuesday. She's the health and wellness columnist for the Sullivan County Democrat. Her article is out now on newsstands or at scdemocratonline.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, a new short film produced right down the road from us in Jeffersonville. This is Radio Chatskill.
This is Jeff Loeffler. Join me each and every Friday, 10 to midnight, as we go deep, playing songs that you don't hear on the radio all the time.
It's the Deep End.
Deep End.
Deep
End.
Deep cuts and live tracks from the worlds of classics, psych, prog, jam, and blues rock. The Deep End, each and every Friday night from 10 to midnight, right here on Radio Catskill.
Well, death, it is a doorway.
Radio Catskill's big annual music sale is just a couple of weeks away. Saturday, November 30th, 10 to 3 at the Liberty Mall in Liberty. We've got tons of records, tons of LPs and CDs, cassettes, 8-tracks, cheap discs priced to move, pricey platters for discerning collectors, plus vintage audio equipment, instruments, oddities, and more. And yes, we're still accepting donations of records in good condition for Radio Catskill's big annual music sale, November 30th, the Saturday after Thanksgiving at the Liberty Mall.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. She Moves in Search of Feeling is a short film exploring the close relationships we form with objects. It was filmed in the Catskill Mountains, and it follows a woman as she moves through natural landscapes. And joining us now is the director of the short film, John Sorensen, Joel Link, of Coil and Drift. Good morning, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for being here. So I kind of laid it out very briefly, a short film about our relationships with objects. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, so I run and own a design studio in Jeffersonville, and we make mostly lighting for the home. We make really beautiful, very kind of detailed, handmade chandeliers and sconces and things like this. And so we're always thinking about what it is to have, you know, relationships with objects, especially objects that we put in our homes. And so we wanted to kind of take that a step further and explore it in this lens of a film. My background is actually in modern dance. I was a professional dancer for many, many years before I started a design studio. And so this film is told through the lens of dance. So it follows a woman and she actually dances throughout the Catskills and encounters these kind of objects, which all of which are our lighting, and they're all suspended outside in nature. So she just almost feels a bit like a fantasy. She kind of comes across these beautiful lights in forests, in pastures, with horses, and dances with them.
So I was going to ask you how creating custom artisanal home decor led to a film, but then you kind of answered it when you said your history is in dance. Let me go back then. How did you go from dance into starting this custom shop?
Yeah, so it was about 10 years ago, and I was, you know, in New York City, kind of dancing, based there, but dancing all over the world. And at some point I just decided that I wanted to explore making things with my hands that were more tangible and less ethereal. And I found my way, to woodworking initially and then to lighting after that, after a couple of years. And, it really just filled this kind of creative desire that I had had. But I design these objects through the lens of my experience as a dancer. I don't have a huge amount of formal training other than my dance training. So I kind of see objects through the spatial awareness that I have as a dancer and choreographer.
That sounds like the plot of a short film.
Yeah.
Is that sort of where this inspiration for the film came from then?
Yeah. So I always wanted, our lighting is very inspired by the materials and the landscape of this place, of the Catskills. So I've been thinking for a long time about putting these lights outside and really like kind of capturing them in this natural landscape. And so we have such an amazing creative community around here. And I kept meeting these awesome people. We have Andrea Lanzetti, who owns Bodies and Plants, the Pilates studio in Livingston Manor. And she's an incredible Pilates instructor, but also an amazing dancer. So I was like, ah, gosh, we have to work together. We have to do something. And then Peter Crosby is a beautiful photographer and also a filmmaker. And I've been craving to work with him for a long time. So, you know, this kind of happens in these really small creative communities where you run into people all the time, you have these ideas and you make them happen because you can, because it's a small community. So that's how it all started. And really we shot it over 3 days. We went outside and, you know, the whole team at our studio was all hands on deck. carrying lights everywhere, and it was a wonderful summer experience.
And you're having a free advanced screening coming up this week. Tell folks more about it.
Tomorrow, actually, Wednesday at the Calicoon Theater at 6 p.m., come by. It's a free screening. We're going to show the film. We're going to have Peter Crosby and Andrea Lanzetti there, and we're all going to have a little talk after we watch the film. And it's a great way to just kind of thank the community and show everyone and what an amazing thing that we have this awesome movie theater. So let's use it and let's see this film on the big screen.
And where do you see this film going next? And where do you see sort of filmmaking folding into the rest of your business and your mission at Coil and Drip?
Yeah, so we're having a big premiere in New York City on Friday, again at another art house movie theater, the Anthology Film Center in the East Village. And then once it's premiered, it will also live on our website. So the original idea of doing a film instead of maybe doing a photo shoot or something more traditional was that, you know, people who aren't able to be in the Catskills and kind of experience this beautiful place and this magical landscape could kind of have a window into what it's like through film. So this film will live on our website, and you'll be able to kind of go and watch it more than once if you want, and kind of hopefully it will give people who are curious about the designs that we make a kind of more full lens into what it is we do and kind of why we do it.
And there's got to be an aspect of this as it's sort of a marketing arm of what you do, but there seems to be a little bit more depth to it, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a marketing exercise, but it's also a creative exercise. And that's really what our studio is about. We're a small studio with three full-time employees and in Jeffersonville. And we're really interested in kind of exploring beyond traditional marketing. So this does show our lighting, and it is really a kind of interesting way to see the work, but it's also, it is definitely a creative exercise and something that is definitely outside the bounds of like a traditional advertising approach.
And folks can see the short film Thursday or tomorrow, actually, November 13th.
Yeah.
I forgot what day it is. But in advance, before the folks in New York City get to see it, you get to see it first.
Absolutely.
Here at the Calicoon Theater. You guys are asking for folks to RSVP. So folks can, where can they RSVP?
Yeah, it's there's an email, RSVP @ coilanddrift.com, which is our website. And if you don't RSVP, we're not going to turn you away. Just come on down.
All right. That is John Sorensen, Joe Link of the design studio based in Jeffersonville, Coil and Drift, talking about the short film, She Moves in Search of Feeling. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Before we go, again, a reminder, there is a red flag warning in effect for the Hudson Valley and also the Catskills. That is because there's a higher risk of wildfire due to a combination of warmer temperatures, low humidities, and stronger winds. There are burn bans in Ulster and Orange, and outdoor burning is prohibited there. Outdoor burning not recommended in other areas. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9. Here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, a red flag warning in effect for the Mid-Hudson Valley and the Catskills. Sunny today, cooler and windy, high only 42, breezy this evening, clear, cold, low 24. Tomorrow, sunny, a high 47, low tomorrow night, 27, and then Thursday, a high of only 38. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.